But I think the biggest learning from this one, which you saw some of it in 2017, but you saw a lot of it this year, is that the community took an event that literally lasts a little over an hour and made it either a full day or a multi-day event and festival.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. We've got a really interesting show today. 2024 has been an interesting year already, and we're still pretty early in the year. And we had an event that was fairly unique, and that was the eclipse. The eclipse kind of took over the nation a couple of weeks ago. And after the eclipse, I've been seeing some posts from a good friend of the show. His name is Amir Elon from Longwoods International. And as I was watching, I was like, man, we ought to do an episode about this. And so Amir was kind enough to join us today to share a little bit of his findings from the research that they've done surrounding the eclipse. And Amir, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Adam. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. So, of course, you do so much research in the industry, so much digging into the different things that happen. You work for individual destinations, but then also do a lot of industry level, large scale work. And I saw you start to post a couple of thoughts about the eclipse. And we had this scheduled last week and ended up having to reschedule. I'm actually glad I'm not glad about the circumstances that caused us to reschedule, but I'm glad we rescheduled. Because from the sounds of it, you now have a more full picture of the results from the eclipse and the impact that it had on the industry. And so I'm wondering if maybe we could have you start by, why is this a major event? How did you know it was something you were going to want to study? And then we can get into the findings of what actually happened.
Sure. Again, glad to be here. We've been hearing buzz about the eclipse for several years now. Obviously, the last major total eclipse across North America and the U.S. specifically was in 2017. And some of our clients back then, I'd been with Longwoods a couple years at that point, and some of our clients back then had big events and massive turnouts for the eclipse, and one of the things I heard afterwards was, boy, I wish we would have kept our finger on the pulse on that to see if we could have quantified it a little bit more than just the anecdotal stuff we were coming in. And so, and there were a couple, I think universities did a couple little studies in their communities and so forth in there, but I kind of always filed that in the back of my mind. And anyway, fast forward to 2024, here we are. And again, those destinations that were along the path of totality. My wife is ironically a DMO in a small community near where we live in Columbus, Ohio, which was in the 100% path of totality there. So they've been planning for it for a couple of years at least. And the bottom line is people weren't sure based on prior experience, which was 2017, there were some communities that got just absolutely flooded with visitors coming in for the event. Some stayed multiple nights, some didn't. You had issues of, traffic jams getting in and getting out, right? People kind of trickled in, but they all left at once, right? And when it's over, it's like a big sporting event from that perspective. And then you've got, and then all the other logistical challenges and so forth. So a lot of communities along the path of totality have really been planning for this for a while. So, we have this tool that we created during COVID called the American Travel Sentiment Tracker. Basically, for the last several years, once a month, we go talk to a group of American travelers about a random sample of 1,000 U.S. travelers, a representative sample across the U.S., and ask them, what are their intentions in regards to travel? Again, this was originally created for COVID. It's kind of a guidepost for, what are travelers going to do through the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic and try to get some early indicators. We've shifted, over the last 3+ years, we've now moved on to other issues, the economy, summer travel season, you name it, anything that's coming up. We want to get travel intention on its sentiment. So we said, let's ask in March. There's a lot of speculation going on in that, and it was fun kind of hearing a lot of folks putting out estimates of what their visitation might be like and so forth, not really based on much, but just kind of putting it out there. Let's just ask the travelers. Let's see what their thoughts are. So in our March planner, Travel Sentiment Tracker, we asked the question, and we said, very simple, are you planning to travel at least 50 miles from home to view the total eclipse on April 8th? And 14% of American travelers said, yeah, we're going to go at least 50 miles from home there.
Can I stop you just real quick, Amir? So when we're talking about a representative sample of the American traveler, how many people, like I know 14% sounds like a large number. Yeah. What's the number of American travelers if we're looking at that representative sample?
Well, so now, you know, if you're extrapolating this, you know, I think what you're asking is you know, what does 14% mean overall? Big picture, it is, you are literally talking about millions and millions of travelers in there. There were, for example, last year in the U.S. alone, there were about 3 billion what we call person trips taken. So when you think about that, say a person trip is one person traveling, you know, one trip, say 50 miles from home. So you're looking at a family of four going somewhere. That's four person trips, right, in there. So when you think about that, now again, this isn't exactly apples to apples because this is a separate survey from our tracking survey, Travel USA, which tells us exactly who, you know, how many people, it tells us how many people went, how many, you know, and what they ended up doing. That is, again, not apples to apples, but if you take 3 billion trips and you take, you know, 14% of that, boil it down to the number of travelers and so forth, you are literally talking about, you know, a good double digit in millions trips, a number of trips that were expected to be taken in there.
Which is incredible. Which is incredible, there are there's not very many events that can draw a 14%, I don't know what I would call it, is like a rate of travelers that are going to drive 50 plus miles. It's a very unique situation.
Right, exactly. And then there's those that live a little closer, didn't have to go 50 miles. And so 8% of those said that they were going to go, travel less than 50 miles to watch the total eclipse. So at the end of the day, you're talking about one out of five American travelers basically telling us, we're going to go see this eclipse. In there, it was incredible. Ironically, because I like irony, 15% of the American travelers told us there's an eclipse. So think about all the media hype, but 15% of them still had no clue. So there we go. Now let's take a look a little closer. So of that 14% you were talking about, and let's talk about it from a dollars and cents perspective. In there, 43% of them said they're going to spend they're going to spend 1 to 2 nights. 20% said they're going to spend 3 to 5 nights away on the trip. 10% said, we're just making it our spring break. We're going to spend 5 nights or more. So you've got almost 3/4 of American travelers, of those 14%, saying, we're going to go and spend at least one night in those communities. So when you think about it, hotel rooms or campgrounds or however they were going in there, you think about the food and beverage spend, you think about, you know, maybe they buy some souvenirs. So many communities along the path of hospitality had special events going on around those days and so forth. So festivals and things like that. So what an opportunity. You got millions of people literally coming with their pockets full of cash to spend money in your community so they can see this event, which, again, isn't going to happen again in the U.S. totality, what, until 2046 or something like that? So, yeah, not bad. So, but Adam, that's what people said they were going to do. So what people say they are going to do isn't always exactly what they do, because life happens and things change.
Yep.
And whatever. And the one thing about the eclipse is, it's kind of weather dependent, right?
Yeah.
And there were some parts of the country. So I live here near Columbus, Ohio. We had a gorgeous, it was a little cloudy in the morning, but it ended up being a gorgeous sunny day for the eclipse. Weather was perfect there. There were other parts of the country that were supposed to be along the path of totality that unfortunately had subpar weather. So we went back after the eclipse back into the field, and we went back to these folks and we said, okay, talk to us. What was your experience here? And so remember we said 14% said they were going to travel at least 50 miles from home and go see the eclipse? Well, cut that number in half. It was 7% that actually went. But that's still a few million trips taken. So
incredible.
So 7% of all American travelers are basically telling us they went at least 50 miles from home there. The 8% that told us that they were going to travel less than 50 miles from home to see the total eclipse, they came. A full 8% came. So basically you had about 15% of American travelers altogether that saw the eclipse. I think that was pretty amazing. Now, of those 7% that said they went at least 50 miles. So 44% of them, almost half of them, ended up just taking a day trip. They came home later the same day there. But 40% actually spent 1 to 2 nights away from home. That's incredible. And that's pretty close to what they said they were going to do. 9% spent 3 to 5 nights, and 7%, slight dip, said they ended up spending more than 5 nights in there. So huge, huge event. Just fantastic. Congratulations to all those communities. Thankfully, we didn't hear too many horror stories of logistical issues and whatnot in there. But I think, you know, obviously the biggest differentiator in those who said what they were going to do and those who actually did was probably weather, depending on what part of the country they were coming from.
Yeah. One of the things I always like to look at, especially when we've got an event like this that affects a portion of the industry, right? Because the path of totality was in a very unique line across the United States. I want to know other destinations that may be dealing with some sort of weather anomaly or lunar anomaly or something like that may cause a spike in travel. What can we learn from what happened this time with the eclipse, whether that's how to prepare for it, whether that's just understanding how much the American traveler values an event like this? What would you say we should learn from it as destinations that may be in the path of totality or something like it in the future?
I think you need to look at where the path goes, right? I think that's the biggest learning example. You know, is it going through near or through major urban areas that have infrastructure, that have a lot of hotel rooms or Airbnbs, that have a lot of campgrounds, that have rest areas? I mean, restrooms is a big thing. There were rural communities that literally their EMS agencies were bringing in portalettes to put along some of the county roads and so forth, because they recognize that these people are going to need to go somewhere and not a lot of places to go if they have a traffic jam. So things like that. There was one county near us that reportedly had helicopters on standby from local aviation companies that you could rent a helicopter, because they were afraid that, you know, what happens if a woman all of a sudden goes into labor in a traffic jam? How do they get a helicopter in there quickly and, you know, get her to the hospital or God forbid, a traffic accident or something like that? So there's those kind of things. But I think the biggest learning from this one, which you saw some of it in 2017, but you saw a lot of it this year, is that the community took an event that literally lasts a little over an hour and made it either a full day or a multi-day event and festival, right? They took the experience and they bundled it and they created some events or some things, or some destinations figured out, how do you get people through a certain path around our communities and through our communities to visit, you know, our retail areas, our bring them in through a festival in the hub of downtown, or get them to other parts of the community, or just bundle it with other products and experiences that you have nearby. So you saw a lot of eclipse themed events that, you know, on the one hand were also there for locals, but on the other hand, we're definitely there for the visitors.
Yeah, it provides a more full experience for the visitor other than just the hour that was dedicated to the eclipse. I think that's a great point. And the common thread that I'm hearing, you know, Amir, I did an episode earlier this year on the impact of Taylor Swift coming to destinations. And I would actually look at this as similar anomalies, right? These are situations that are somewhat out of the destination's control. But when it happens, it's a game changer. And the common thread with the destinations that were successful with hosting Taylor Swift and all her fans was that they created additional experiences to supplement the driver of the travel, right? And I think that's what you're saying, is when you're going to have an anomaly like this, something that's out of your control that you know is going to get people to the destination, you can let that happen and just benefit from it by filling your hotels, or you can create a full experience that maximizes the revenue opportunity, that maximizes the value of the experience that the visitor has, and really build for the future off of this anomaly that's affecting the destination.
Exactly. I mean, there is a potential longer term halo effect for this, right? You got people into certain communities maybe they've never ventured to before. Some may be within a regional drive market. Some may have been a more longer haul a trip for them. Perfect Storm was a place like Cleveland, Ohio, right? Well, they had the women's Final Four going on the same time, the same weekend as the eclipse, get a rolling off of there. I mean, how many people just said, you know what, I'm going to stay one more night in Cleveland. Check this out. And and people got out beyond just the, you know, the basketball arena and the core of that, you know, downtown entertainment area there. Just incredible for them. But then there were other smaller communities that you may have never heard of that did these wonderful little community-wide events that just you know, made people go, wow, this is a cool part of the country. These are some friendly people. There's some neat things here. I want to come back here with my family on another road trip sometime and explore some more. So there's definitely going to be a halo effect from this, for sure.
Yeah, and you got to plan ahead to capitalize on an opportunity like that.
Absolutely. No, I some people kind of, I know a lot of people that are kind of rolling their eyes and they're like, this eclipse isn't for 2 or 3 more years. And you guys are already talking about this, you know, there. But kudos to those destinations that did plan. Kudos to those that did it, because they learned some things along the way. Some things they'll probably won't repeat. Some things that they probably would do again in a heartbeat. And I think that's a really cool, you know, that's a great way to get some community alignment. And especially with your other economic development stakeholders and so forth, is to hear some things we can rally around and get some attention for our community.
Great. You know, Amir, anytime I have you, of course, we're talking about a specific topic here with the eclipse, but I think I would be wasting an opportunity if I didn't ask, what else are you seeing in your ongoing research, especially since 2024, it's an election year, which always is this wild card that you can't predict some of the things that are going to happen. But we've got, you know, recent announcements from the Fed that maybe we're not going to get the rate cuts that we thought we were going to get. And inflation seems to be kind of spiking a little bit again. And so there's all these different circumstances that are hitting the travel economy right now. I'd love to understand from a data perspective what you're seeing as far as visitor sentiment.
Adam, you've asked the perfect question. I love answering this question, because we have seen a shift post-pandemic of what travel means to Americans, to American travelers there. You know, pre-pandemic, you typically saw when economic cycles happened and, you know, things get a little shaky, we always used to say, right, tourism is the first into a recession, one of the last industries out of a recession, and so forth. Yeah, we haven't really seen that recession yet, right? It's kind of, is it coming? Isn't it coming? Is it coming? Is it coming? For 2 years, the economists have kind of kept us, at bay with this. And again, I'm not an economist, so I can't claim to be one here. But the interesting thing is, even though inflation had been hitting record highs over the last couple of years, and of course we discussed some bad news about inflation recently here again, and hence the Fed kind of hedging on what they might be doing here the next several months. But even with inflation rising, the interesting thing is that the demand for travel has not declined. Even the most recent findings that we're releasing here in a couple of days will show you that 9 out of 10 American travelers are still telling us they have plans to go somewhere in the next 6 months. Now, that being said, for the past year and a half to 2 years, since we've been seeing the record inflation, all this talk about threat of recession and so forth, there, we have seen, you know, this consistent, there's one quarter of American travelers that are greatly concerned that their financial situation and inflation and gas prices and airfares and all these costs of travel are going to greatly impact their decision to travel in the next 6 months. It's been hovering, those greatly concerned, it's been hovering around one quarter. And when you look at all those who say they're concerned, slightly concerned or greatly concerned, it's about 45% or so that's kind of been, there's almost half of travelers have at least some concern about their pocketbook and how that's going to, you know, impact their decision to travel. But when we ask those who are greatly concerned about this, how is it impacting their decision to travel? Only 5% are canceling trips. Now, Adam, mind you, at any given time, 2 to 3% of all trips are being canceled anyway, right? Family emergency, somebody got ill, somebody, you know, whatever, work thing, whatever in there. So they're not really canceling trips. What are they doing? They're reallocating their spend. They're saying, okay, we're going to make this happen. We're going to make this trip happen. But what that means is instead of, you know, family of four, instead of we're going to Myrtle Beach, instead of four of us all getting the same t-shirt like we do for annual Christmas card, maybe just the kids are getting the t-shirts this year. We're going to maybe eat a little more McDonald's, a little less fine dining. Maybe we're going to pack sandwiches for the car ride on the road. Maybe we're going to stay, maybe our choice of accommodations is going to be the place that includes a breakfast bar. So that's one less meal out. That's what they're doing. They're reallocating their spend. Adam, we have seen something happen over the last few years that we hadn't seen before. In the eyes of American travelers, travel went from being a want to a need. That is key. When travel went from being a want to a need, that's a game changer for us.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And it's an interesting insight that, you know, I would say if we're looking at a budgetary spreadsheet for a family's finances, if I'm understanding you correctly, travel used to be somewhere near the bottom and could be something that could be wiped away if we got in a pinch. And now it's moved so far up the spreadsheet that it's not going to move.
Remember that term staycation? Boy, that's a word.
Yes.
Because it doesn't mean stay put. Staycation was a regional day trip. You know that. It didn't mean stay put. But remember that first got coined in the recession that hit right after 9/11. And then when the Great Recession hit, boy, we heard that everywhere in there. You're not hearing that now. You're not hearing it in there. People are making, they're going to figure out how to take that trip and how to make it happen. It is a priority of their lifestyle now.
So then my question, Amir, is as a destination marketer that's hearing this conversation and understanding that traveling has become much more of a priority for today's American, how should I action on this knowledge? If you put yourself in the DMO's chair, knowing that this data is correct, even though we've got these economic circumstances, is your suggestion, okay, let's be more aggressive in chasing the American traveler? Is it, well, still pull back, but you may outperform your projections? What's your recommendation for destination marketers that are hearing this?
Here are my three tips for any destination marketers listening in here. Number one is work with your partners, the attractions, the hotels, et cetera. Resist the urge to discount. The traveler is seeking value, not a discount. Everybody's looking for a deal. Yeah, of course, if you ask a traveler, would you like a discount? Of course they'll take it. But more than anything, what's driving their decisions on how they spend their money and so forth? Listen, inflation's gone up across the board. Everything costs more. The traveler, the consumer is already conditioned that everything is going to cost more. We literally just asked the question, compared to last year, how much do you plan to spend on travel this summer? And 30% of travelers are telling us they expect to spend more. But why? It's because of inflation. It's not because they're just, I feel like I'm going to really splurge this summer. No, they know it's going to cost them more. So it's not about having to slash and burn rate. And you know how it goes. You get a couple hotels in an intersection going at a bidding war, on a slash and burn, you can lose rate in a heartbeat and it takes a couple of years to get it back. So perception of value. Be careful not to fleece our customers. Be careful not to, make sure that whatever you're promising, you're delivering on. And that's it. So the perception of value is important. Focus on promotion. So tip number one, do promotions that focus on value versus just slash and burn discounting in there. Number two, why are travelers traveling? Why are leisure travelers traveling? We ask this question all the time. We dig a little deeper to it every few months, and we did so this spring again. And immediately post pandemic, from say 2021 to 2020, so the beginning of 2024, most people who travels were traveling what I call for reasons of re, the letters R-E. In there. They're traveling to, because remember they were separated from families, or they wanted to reconnect with families, with friends. They wanted to rekindle relationships. They wanted to rebuild. They wanted to reunite. They wanted to, have reunions and so forth. And of course, relax. So these are crazy, stressful times. And so these are the main, those words that start with RE, they're very powerful. They have emotional connections to us. So in the messaging for marketers, tip number two is those rewards still mean a lot. So in your language, in your messaging, do the things that connote words that start with RE. Call them out, use them. They're hot buttons for the travelers, they're triggers. But we have seen a shift since the middle of 2023, since late last summer, and it's happening now. And we predict it's going to go into in through 2025 as well. And so here's our little crystal ball prediction for you. While re is still very, very important for the traveler, they've now reconnected with their friends and their loved ones. They've now reunited with folks. They've done all that. And yes, they still need to do more. But now a lot of the travelers are saying, yeah, but what's in it for me now? So you have to add me to the re, okay? Boy, that sounded like a total cliche, didn't it? but you have to add some me to the re.
No, can I stop you real quick on that, Amir? Because I think that's a very powerful point. Because we talk about the difference between features and benefits, right? Features are all the different attractions that you have, dining establishments, all the different things that people can do when they're there. But the benefit is, what does it do for your life? How does it make your life better? And I think what you're saying is, while the rewords were a really powerful call to action of what it's going to do for your relationships or for your family or whatever, the benefit that we may need to focus on moving forward based on the data that you're seeing is more focused on the benefit to the individual. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And so it's twofold, right? There is a benefit for them. They want to be around family and friends. That re is still an important benefit to them. But they also realize now that what happened over these last couple of years, right? We were, I hate that word, bleisure, right? I hate bleisure even more than staycation.
We need a glossary of Amir's banned terms in the industry.
Yes, words, not the trigger words for Amir, right? Yeah, but I mean, bleisure, it's like saying moist, right? It's like, what are you, that's just going to flow, right? You don't want to say it in there. But here it was, because people could work from anywhere. You know, the expectations of the workplace changed a little bit, and the bosses were saying, yeah, you're going out to that conference in California. You want to spend a couple more days and explore the coast? Go for it. Have fun, you know, in there. But then the boss was also expecting that you were plugged in. And our data is showing more and more our travelers, we asked the question again last month, they are more focused on work-life balance than ever. And they're telling us they are now 30% less likely to work during their trips in there. So they need to discuss. So it's not just that re of uniting and be there, but I also need my time. I need my downtime. So again, if you're a destination marketer, it's not just showing that family having fun on the beach together, but it's mom having some quiet time in the spa, dad just hanging out on the golf course, whatever those hot buttons are. You have to bring the me into the re now. So in there, both are going to be equally important in the next year, I think.
I think those are really interesting insights, Amir, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. Is there anything else that would benefit destinations that are listening that you're seeing in the data that you're collecting on an ongoing basis?
A separate from this study, I think it's important to, and we've been preaching this for the last, 5-6 years now, it's really important that every destination marketing organization adds to its list of KPIs sentiment, resident sentiment. Let's not forget, the visitor is still our most, from our pocketbook perspective, the visitor is the most important customer. But from our operational perspective, from our existential perspective, from our ability to grow our community and grow in alignment with our community, the resident is the most important customer there. And if you're not taking a pulse check periodically of your residents and how they feel about these visitors coming through their communities, how they feel about the Airbnb springing up in their neighborhoods, how they feel about the whatever development project that's happening right along their waterfront or lakefront or whatever in there. If you're not having that conversation with them, and you're not using that conversation, the results of those conversations, to guide your messaging and communication with them, you're going to find yourself in a problem. Maybe not today, but it'll happen.
But our job is to make the lives of our residents better, right? That's our primary role.
Exactly.
If we're not tracking whether or not we're doing that, if we're not tracking their sentiment towards what we're doing, then of course we're missing the boat.
And Adam, let me tell you, the one thing we see consistently in over 80% of these resident sentiment studies that we do for our clients, in over 80% of them, you see the residents absolutely understand the benefits of tourism. They understand that they're not against tourism promotion. They're not against, having visitors here. They understand that they're spending money in their community and so forth. But when you ask them how it impacts their daily life, they don't draw that direct connect to, wow, well, that helps broaden the tax base, so it's less of a burden on me. They don't say that, well, it actually produces greater, better infrastructure for us, that we have, you know, more places to play and our kids to learn and arts are great and all that. They don't necessarily see that impacting their pocketbook or their quality of life, which tells me that, you know, they agree with all these positives, but they don't, can't draw the connect. We haven't done a right job of messaging yet.
Man, great point to wrap up here on, Amir. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today and for being flexible in the schedule and that we're able to find a time to make it work. If people want to learn about the research that you're doing, about your organization or anything else, Amir, what's the best way for them to reach out and learn more?
Longwoods-intl.com, or we're all over social media. Just ping us.
Great. Amir, thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Adam. Anytime.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. It helps us continue to bring you amazing guests like Amir. Thanks, everybody, and have a great week.